Welcome in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Got a good show for you today, folks. You know, I've had some interesting experiences in my life, and the people around me have had some interesting experiences in their life as well. One of the ones I have a hard time with, and I'll give you this, I'm a pretty empathic person, and I can relate to a lot of things in my life, but one of the things that I have to apologize for first to the people in my life is sometimes people will come to me and say, Tim, I'm having this particular experience, and automatically the skeptical side of me jumps up. And I don't mean for it to. I really don't mean for it to jump up, because I want to be with that person in their corner when it happens. And the first thing I want to be is loving and caring and open and be there for them. But then that skeptical side pops up and I try to suppress it. And one of those things that happens in the paranormal that I don't feel like at times I'm equipped to help with, because I've never had it happen in my life, is I don't feel like I've had happen. I'm going to talk to our guest about it. Is anything happened to do with UFO or UAP experiences or abductions? Now, I have people in my life who have had both, and I feel awkward at times when it's brought to me, because I don't know how to deal with it. And I do want to talk to our guest about how we deal with that and what we do when it's brought to our doorstep, and what we do when it happens to us, because it is a touchy subject. It's one of those things that is subject to ridicule right away when it's brought to our doorstep. Our guest today is Lester Velez, who is a graduate of the University of Vermont with a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration. Beginning in September of 1970, he served in the U.S. Army as a field artillery officer and was later vice president of Luscom Engineering, a Silicon Valley-based manufacturer's representative company. He joined MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, in 1991 and has held the following positions: field investigator, training coordinator for field investigators, the assistant state director in Northern California, chairman of the AERC, Abduction Experiencer Research Committee, and team leader of the ART, Abduction Response Team. Also during that time, he became a facilitator for an abduction support group in San Jose, California. And in 1994, he co-founded OPUS, the Organization for Paranormal Understanding and Support. We're going to talk a lot about OPUS today with Les, and we're going to talk about the good work that OPUS does and why OPUS is one of those organizations that you do want to turn to if you've had one of those experiences. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome in to Darkness Radio, Les Velez. Hello, Les. How are you today?
Great, Tim. How are you? Good to be here.
Fantastic, my friend. Fantastic. So, let me just speak from personal experience here. And I want to start off from there, and we'll work our way forward. I do have people in my life who've come to me and they've said, you know, Tim, I've had this experience. And I think most of us who haven't had that experience, immediately Mr. Skeptic jumps up in our head and says, have you really? And that's the wrong attitude, isn't it, Les?
Well, the thing is that these things are so unusual, so outside the realm of normal experiences, that that's a logical response, I think, for most people when that person is telling you this kind of a story. And this is something that OPUS has been trying to do for years now, is to educate the mental health community, the medical community, hypnotherapists that work with people like this. And so it's important to be able to have a neutral listening ear, so to speak, to be able to let that person tell you their story. And what I found over the years, you know, I was kind of like which you mentioned, Mr. Skeptic jumps up. And I remember, you know, in the very beginning, I was more of a nuts and bolts kind of a guy with regard to UFOs, UAPs. But when I became a field investigator, almost without exception, the cases that were not only sightings, but also people were telling me about the fact that they had contact with non-human intelligences. So, you know, my window of believability started to widen and not be as skeptical about this. And a lot of these people had gone to a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and they thought they were going crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found out that they were not going crazy. So then what? What do you do then? And most of these people couldn't turn to family members. They couldn't turn to people that they work with or their clergy or anybody. They're very alone and afraid that if they do talk to people about this, that they will assume that this person is going off the deep end. And unfortunately, that's not the case. These people have had an experience, and that's the big question, is what this experience is. And what we've found, basically, in a number of studies, one that we did called the Omega 3 study, that these people do not have a psychopathology. So then what? They're not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They're having an experience that's very impactful, not only on a psychological point of view, but also on a physical and point of view. So it's an incredible phenomena. And I think with the government finally now, you know, saying that UAPs exist, the next step is, what about these people that are having experiences with non-human intelligences? What is that all about?
Right.
Are these the drivers of those UAPs? You know, once you start going down that rabbit hole, it becomes quite complex.
I want to get into that government report here when we get later into the program, and how it verifies for some people that what they're having or what they're experiencing really does validate what they're going through. We'll get to that in a little bit. But, you know, I want to tell you a little bit about what really started to solidify things for me that I can open up to people. And that is that probably about 12 years ago, we were on a family vacation. And I was sitting with my now oldest nephew, who was in his early 20s. At the time, he's just a 10-year-old. And we're outside and we're looking up at the sky and we're looking at the stars, the night stars, and just out of nowhere, because he's familiar with the fact that I'm doing a paranormal show, but he's so young, so I don't think that he really realizes what I'm doing. But he looks at me and he says, "Uncle Timmy, do you think that aliens are out there?" And I'm like, "Well, I'd like to think that they're out there, you know, and I'd like to think that they're zooming around up there in their spaceships." And he says, "Do you think we could call out to one?" I was like, "Well, you know, I don't know. I have friends that do that sort of stuff." And he mm-hmm. goes, "Well, how would we do it if we could?" I said, "Well, let's just kind of watch up in the night sky, buddy, and see what we can do." And there's this thing flying around that doesn't look like it's flying in a natural pattern. Now, it could have been a satellite. It could have been, you know, as you know, anything that's flying in kind of an odd pattern, flying faster than something normally would fly and in an unusual pattern. Well, this thing goes flying from east to west, but then boom, shoots straight up in a pattern that just is not natural for anything that we have.
Absolutely.
So I had this spotlight that, you know, you normally use to shine whatever on, you know, you're in the deep woods, you use it for whatever. So I take this spotlight and I kind of click it a few times to see if it acknowledges us, right? So my nephew's getting all excited. He thinks, you know, "Oh, maybe we got something." Well, this thing's light goes from tiny to big to tiny.
Mm.
To kind of signal us, like it acknowledges us. Oh my gosh, my nephew jumped up and down. He said, do it again. I'm like, "I don't know that we should be stirring anything up here, right?" And I don't know if I'm encouraging this kid, and I don't know if it's healthy, right? So I do it one more time. And sure enough, this thing goes from, you know, it does it twice because I click it twice, you know, just click, you know, just to see if maybe we're on the same wavelength, because the first time could have been a fluke. And it does it again. It goes from big to little to big to little, just to acknowledge that we're on the same wavelength. And I'm thinking at this point now, is it the intention of the two of us? And it's picking up our intention? And it's just there to say hi, just to let us know that it's there, or whatever the deal is, innocent enough. And at that point, my nephew runs into the cabin, right? And starts screaming to my mom and dad,
"Come on out.
Grandma, grandpa, guess what? We saw a UFO." And gets the old folks upset, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they think, oh my God, we're bringing down Satan on their heads and all this other stuff. But it was at that point, I think he thought that this was just the coolest thing ever. And at that point, I thought, you know what? Maybe there is something out there that maybe I stirred it up. And I just, at that point, I could drop the skepticism and go, okay, you know, I'm believing a little bit now.
Absolutely. I mean, this is things that you hear people doing. And, you know, this was a very safe situation. There are other people that have done things like that and turned out to be not as fun. So you've had a positive experience with that. Yeah, I think that intention is a big part of it. I think especially your nephew, you know, this is the part that the younger generation nowadays are amazing. In July, my wife passed away.
I'm sorry.
And she passed away at my daughter's house. Mm-hmm. And we have grandkids there. The 8-year-old, he was just absolutely amazing. You know, during this process of her passing, and I was sitting at the table, dining room table, and he came into the room and he said, "Peepaw," that's what they call me, Peepaw.
Yeah.
"Hey, Meemaw's standing behind you right now."
Oh, wow.
And he's told me previously, when he stayed over at my house, that he's seen a ghost in my house. And so he has an ability somehow to connect with the, you know, people that have passed. And I think the same thing goes for your nephew. I think that his intention was so in tune that this thing happened. And that's part of this whole process of consciousness, you know, which people are talking about a lot these days. You know, how are these things possible? What is causing these things to happen? What realm is this in? There's so many things that are all interconnected, whether you talk about poltergeist activity, demons or angels or, you know, aliens. It's all connected in some way that we don't fully understand. But it's all possible, I believe. Whatever you can possibly think of, because people say, well, is it extraterrestrial in nature? Is it interdimensional in nature? Is it time travelers? Is it our military? Well, I kind of think it's all the above and probably a whole lot more that you can possibly think of that is happening. And so your experience with your nephew is great, absolutely great. I did an experiment. We did a very similar experiment, but on a big, large scale, very mm-hmm. large scale,
mm-hmm.
with a gentleman that was still very well known in the field, but I'm not going to use his name because he swore us to secrecy.
Sure,
but we
sure.
did this. We did this, you know, flashing a light thing,
mm-hmm.
and that night, I mean, we had probably 20 people out there in this field, and the bottom line was nothing happened that night. Absolutely nothing. And you know, I'm again, maybe from a scientific standpoint, the way this was all set up, this was not appropriate to make contact, and so you know, but what you guys did, you and your nephew did, was just right on. I mean, it made it happen.
Interesting. Now, let me ask you this question, Les, because this is kind of where the worm turns, and that's, where does intention go wrong and where does good become bad? In other words, where does an innocent contact, like flashing a light and getting a response, and something that's so innocent, like just playing back and forth, become a negative experience where you actually start to have contact with these things and it becomes experimentation and it becomes, I'm having bad experiences. These things are showing up and you're hearing about things like implants, or you're hearing about things like repeat visitations or time loss or
dilation. Yeah.
Dilation. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good question. And I think some of it has to do with how you were brought up, you know, what your background is, you know, the fear factor that comes to play. You know, a lot of experiencers have had experiences starting when they were very young, you know, with the person walking into their room, you know, this little person, you know, and or it's a bunny, it's a large bunny, you know. They shapeshift and do all these things so that they try to calm the person down. But the negative is also the flip side of these things. They can scare the crap out of you. And that could go through the rest of your life, especially if it continues to happen, where it starts off negatively and it continues to do so. But most of the experiences that people have start off negative. In a lot of cases, most cases, like 80% of the cases, they turn out to be very positive. And only a small percentage, like 20 to 25% of the people, continue to have negative experiences. I think it has to do with, like we have here on our planet, we have good people and we have bad people.
Okay.
You hear stories, horrible stories of people being shot at malls. You know, and they're out there just having a nice day with their family, shopping, and all of a sudden, you know, half their family gets killed or something. I mean, this is horrible, absolutely horrible. And I think the same thing is going on up there or wherever there is, that we have good ones and we have bad ones, even within the particular groups. Like, you know, you hear about the grays all the time. They seem to be like the number one entity that people come into contact with. Mm-hmm. And there's supposedly good ones and bad ones in that group. And same thing with the reptilians. I've heard wonderful, loving stories about contact with the reptilians, which most people talk about them in a very negative way. So
why is that? I want to get into that too in the second segment, because I have a book here that I'd interviewed Nigel Kerner's cohort. I don't have a better name for it. Danielle Silverman, who wrote, I don't know if you're familiar with Nigel Kerner's work, but he wrote a book shortly before he passed away called Gray Aliens and Artificial Intelligence. And it was an interesting look at what gray aliens actually were. And we'll get into this in the second half of the program. And it talks about why people are having bad experiences with gray aliens. But you're right. Reptilians seem to get a bad rap. But there are a lot of people that say that they're good, that they've had pleasant experiences with reptilians. Why is it because reptilians look scary that people think that they're having a bad experience with reptilians?
Or they're having physically a bad experience with them. I mean, you know, whatever interaction that they're having is negative. I don't think you can just make a blanket statement. You know, there's a couple of schools of thought. You know, you have the Stephen Greer school, where everybody's good, there's no bad aliens, and then you have the late Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs now that talk about how they're all negative. It's all a bad situation. And I don't agree with that. I think that you have a mixture. It's just like, again, what we have here. We have good people and we got bad people.
Yeah.
And the same thing is going on in the universe. And the grays seem to be like the initial phase of contact, seemingly. It's almost like all the, you know, whether you're talking about the mantids, the reptilians, the Nordics, they all use grays in working with us. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like there's a iPhone store in the universe and they sell only grays. And then people go out there and pick up a gray and say, okay, now.
Right.
And I think part of it is the fact that what these grays are, you know, it is biological robotic entity of some sort that really, you know, the Nordics or the mantids or the reptilians don't want to directly contact us initially anyway, because we can be violent. And I've had stories where people have bit the grays, one ripped off an arm, and then these things just basically, you know, move on and continue to do their work. It's no big deal.
Is it the Starlight Ranch where the owner was lopping off the heads of grays with a sword? I think is what the story was. And now we might as well get into what Nigel Koerner said, because you just hit it right on the head in his book, Gray Aliens and Artificial Intelligence, The Battle Between Natural and Synthetic Beings for the Human Soul. He says essentially what you just said there, and that is he doesn't believe that the grays are an actual being or a race, that they're they're robotic. That essentially, like you said, they're the iPhones of these beings, and that what he's formulated, he actually went one step further, and he put it this way: if there is an alien race out there, that they're probably on the outer edges of the universe, and as you put it quite brilliantly, we are a very violent race, and that they wouldn't want to travel all the way across a galaxy to come to this planet only to get chopped up.
or shot,
right? So what they probably did was send these sentries, these robotic sentries out to carry out whatever experiments they need to carry out or do whatever work they needed to do, and put these frontline robotic soldiers out there to carry out their work and then do their experiments and bring out the results to them, because either one, they don't have the technology to travel or traverse the universe, or two, they do, but they just don't want to put themselves in danger.
Yeah, I mean, it's Haim Meshed, that Israeli general that wrote that book recently about the fact that you know, the aliens are here. We're already working with them. We have bases on the moon and Mars, and that basically the aliens don't want to make themselves known because we're not ready. Mm-hmm. We are not ready for that revelation. And so it's so many layers of this. You know, you talk about conspiracies, you know, the government covering up all this stuff. Well, if you know, you're a government and supposedly in power and running the show, you're not really running the show. If you tell the people that we can't control what's going on, you know, sorry about you being abducted. We had a deal with Eisenhower, you know, way back when, but that fell through, and they're continuing to abduct people. It's fascinating. There's just so many intricacies to this story, nuances to it, that you know, why, if they're so intelligent, why do they just take a few people and then leave us alone? They've got all the information that they need. Well, I kind of think of it in terms of the fact that we're not at the top of the food chain, number one. Mm-hmm. That these entities, whoever they are, have schools, and they need to continue to teach their offspring how to work with these animals, meaning us.
Okay.
You know, this is what we do with a dolphin. You know, we pull it out of the water, we take a blood sample, we tag it, we throw it back in. A year later, we come back and pull the same one out, you know,
yeah,
check its tag, take some more blood, you know, make sure the tag is working and throw them back in the water. It's very similar.
It is. Yeah. It's a lot like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some theories in there too. And I mean, there's some, I don't know if you find them far out theories that, first of all, I want to backtrack a little bit, to soft disclosure, because you did kind of, you know, you kind of addressed something without addressing it. And that's this: if the government really had a control over alien races or a pact with alien races, would they really throw it out to the general public and release videos and say, well, we don't know what it is, can you figure it out for us? Do you honestly think they have a handle on the thing if they would do something like that?
Well, I think that the bottom line is that I don't, you know, based on the Brookings report, that if something like that came out, we would have a major crisis on our hands. But I disagree with that. I think that 70% of the people in the world would be perfectly fine with the knowledge that we're not alone, that they're here. But again, you know, from a political standpoint, and that's where it gets interesting. Do you want to be the president, you know, to stand up in front of Congress or whatever and tell the people, hey, yeah, they're here. And I want to welcome this gentleman from Zeta Reticuli, you know, and bring him into Congress. I mean, as crazy as that might sound, maybe that's the way it's going to happen one day, you know? But
Les, doesn't the president who does that, doesn't that president look like he's the ultimate powerful president, because he's the one who's corralled the alien and brought him into Congress?
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's the other side of the coin. Yeah.
You know,
or else, you know, when he starts that speech, they start laughing and, you know, accusing him of being crazy. That's the other side of the coin. But, you know, I think it's a political power situation that occurs where, because, and this is what, you know, Lou Elizondo, you know, and I think he was really smart about presenting it in this way, that the UAPs present a threat of some sort. And that's the only way you'd get Congress to really fund anything, is to tell them that this is a threat and we got to find out what it is. And, if we don't, it could be a problem for us. So right away, you know, that throws it back in the lap of the government and saying, okay, we are now accepting the fact that these things are real. We have multiple data points to confirm that this thing is happening, and we don't understand what it is. However, I think that's a lie. I think they do understand a lot more than what they're telling us. And, you know, they've had secret meetings in Congress about this topic, classified ones, and which, of course, we don't know anything about. But I happened to have lunch with Lou Elizondo a couple of years ago, right before COVID shut everything down. Mm-hmm. And he was scribbling on a piece of paper what they believed was how these things operate.
Hmm.
And nobody has ever said anything about that. Certainly not Lou. And maybe I shouldn't be spilling the beans, but the bottom line is, I think we're too far down the path not to spill something like that.
Sure. Well, you know, before we take our break, I'll throw this out there. And this isn't a political statement at all. It's just something to ruminate about. An entire division of the armed forces got built without any rationale whatsoever. And that's Space Force. It got built and it's operational, and we don't know why. There's really not, Les, there's really not a rationale as to why Space Force exists, other than, you know, we may need it someday.
It's well, that goes back to what Haim Ashed, that general in the Israeli army, in his book, talks about the fact that we already got bases on the moon and Mars, and so how the hell do you get there? You got to have a space force.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that's one question that never comes up. You know, we were at the beginning of the year here, we're facing a governmental shutdown, but nobody ever says, oh, by the way, with that money we're throwing at Space Force, what are we throwing it at Space Force for? Nobody ever questions it. Nobody ever says, why are we funding Space Force?
Well, it's kind of neat. I think that's what it is. I mean, people are saying, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
We have a Space Force.
Yeah, we have a Space Force, you know, but you know, there's a reason it's there, but nobody talks about it. And it got funded quick and with very little fanfare.
Well, you know, that goes to the fact that there's supposedly two major groups of aliens, that one group wants to harm us. The other group is trying to help us against those aliens. So, and I think the Space Force is part of that whole deal. Hmm. That now we're going to, and you know, talking about laser weaponry and all kinds of exotic weaponry that's coming on board, and you wonder why we really need it. You know, it's probably because something is coming down the pike here, and that we need to address it.
Crazy stuff, I tell you. Our guest is Les Velez. We'll be talking a little bit in the second part of the program about OPUS, and we'll be talking about abductees and people who have had actual experiences with some of these aliens. Les, we're going to put a link in the description of the show as to how people can get a hold of OPUS if they've had experiences with any type of paranormal phenomena.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you so much, Tim.
Absolutely. And how they can get a hold of you. And we'll talk a little bit in the second part of the program as to the psychological and physiological characteristics of alien contact as well. When we come back, more with Les, and we'll talk more about some of the crazy stuff that's happening in the universe. It's coming up next on the Best of Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Our guest is Les Velez, the facilitator of OPUS, co-founder of OPUS as well. That's the Organization for Paranormal Understanding and Support. Les, we're deep into it, my friend. We're talking about, before the break, we were talking about all kinds of things having to do with where we're at right now as far as the alien phenomenon and why certain things are operating as they do, especially within the United States. Let's scale it back a little bit, because we got down the wormhole a little before we went to break. But let's scale it back to the individual and people who are potentially having issues. And I want to get back to your history as well.
Sure.
Let's talk about how you got involved with MUFON, first of all. Let's okay. Take it back to that.
Sure.
What experience did you have personally that got you involved with MUFON?
Well, you have to go way back in my history. When I was 11 years old, this is when I was living in Connecticut. I was coming into the house. It was early evening in October, late October, and I looked over to the right, and here's this object hovering over a tree line, an oval, whitish in color, no sound whatsoever, just kind of drifting along, and scared the hell out of me. And I ran in the house and tried to get my father to come out. By the time I was able to get him out, this object was gone. And he said, well, it was probably a beacon of light reflecting off a cloud or something, you know, and I didn't buy that. This was way too real, an object. And so, you know, soon thereafter, I went to the library and started reading books on UFOs. And back in the late 50s, George Adamski was the big author back then. And so I was totally immersed in it for a while. And then it's almost like somebody threw a switch. It was like it kind of left my, you know, thought pattern. And girls became a little bit more interesting as became a little bit older.
That'll happen.
And yeah. And I eventually went off to the University of Vermont and got married after graduation, went into the service and spent 6 years in the service in the artillery branch as a officer. And in 1985, got an opportunity business-wise to move out to California. Mm-hmm. And I picked up the San Jose Mercury News, as it was called then. And Stanton Freeman was coming to San Jose City College to talk about UFOs and the government cover-up. And it was like somebody threw the switch again. It was like, oh, my God, I got to go see this guy.
Yeah.
And I expected to see a handful of people there. Well, the auditorium was packed. There must have been like 300 people there. And when he finished giving his inimitable, you know, lecture, it was phenomenal. I was really jazzed. And MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, had a table in the foyer and talking about their monthly journal. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to start getting the journal. And after a while, that wasn't enough for me. I needed to dig in deeper, and they have a training course for field investigators. And so I took the course, passed the test, became an investigator, and went out with a more seasoned investigator on my initial cases. And almost without exception, as I said earlier in our discussion, that these cases not only were sightings, but then people talked about the fact that they had these experiences with non-human intelligences. And the next thing I know, these people are asking me, do I know of other people having similar experiences? And I said, yes, I do. So I started to facilitate a support group in my office in San Jose. That's when things really got interesting. I mean, the stories that these people started to tell, you know, being with other people that have had similar circumstances, they really opened up. And as I said, the stories were incredible. And just as a side note, I wrote a book a year and a half ago called The Unknown Other and the Existential Proposition of Alien Contact. And in that book, I talk about in the beginning two cases that were quite interesting. And then I have 25 stories from people that are in the Opus online support group. We have a number of things that we can do, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But sure. The stories that these people told were quite interesting, and one of the stories that I talk about in the book is this couple. They were picnicking in a park north of Santa Cruz, and they were coming down. It's a rather hilly park, and it eventually ends up, you know, at the foot of the Pacific Ocean. And they're coming out of this hilly area, and they notice this light over the ocean, and it just fascinated them. It got bigger and bigger until it was literally over their head. And it was a triangular craft about the size of a small Learjet. So they noticed another light over the ocean, and it gets bigger and bigger. And then next thing I know, it's right over their heads again. And the first one they observed, they were looking at it. The second one, they felt it was looking at them, and they start to become frightened. And this happened five more times. Total of seven craft. It went into this canyon behind them, and they were all sitting there doing this butterfly thing just like that. And the next thing, the whole group went up vertically, and they were all lined up vertically, and it's like they went around a corner, and there was no corner to go around, and they just disappeared.
Weird.
Well, At that point, they started to go out of the park, and they felt like they were on automatic control. They felt like they were drifting out of there. And this area where they were coming out of during the day is very dark and rocky, and it's hard to navigate even with daylight. So the next thing they know, they're down by their car, and that's the last thing they remember until 3 hours later. They end up in a restaurant north of the park, which only takes like 5 to 10 minutes to get to. And they have no recollection of how they got there or what happened to them. They subsequently came to one of the support group meetings that we had. And they had developed a rash after this experience. And they went to a doctor. And, you know, this area's got poison oak, poison ivy, you know, all over the park. And the doctor said, well, it's not either one of those. I'm not sure what it is. And so they decided to go to, I think they went to his doctor first, and then they went to her doctor, and because it was a couple, as I mentioned. And he said, or she said, that I don't know, maybe something internal, but I don't know what it is. And so they took picture of it.
Okay.
And they brought the picture of their rash to the group. And as they showed it around, almost without exception, they all said that they had a similar rash at one time or another. And one of the people in the group says, well, I think I know what that's from. And so we sitting there with our mouths open saying, okay, what do you think it is? Well, I'm pretty sure it's the reaction that you have after they dip you in the fluid to sanitize you when they bring you on board the craft.
Whoa.
So that was quite an interesting experience to hear that. And so I outlined that in the book in more detail, of course. And it's a phenomenal story. And all these people that are in the support group, we have over 300 people from literally around the world that are communicating 24/7 with one another, telling their stories, asking questions, and understanding that they're not alone. So one of the things, as I mentioned, is this support group that Opus has available to people. We also have a referral list of mental health practitioners, hypnotherapists, and then the latest thing that we've developed is the EST, the Experiencer Support Team. These are people very familiar with the topic that are kind of a triage unit, where people will get contacted by them if they so desire. And you can have this conversation with them about what it is that you're looking for, and you know, and trying to better understand what their particular situation is, because that's important. So they listen in a very neutral way. You know, they don't make any derogatory comments or, you know, saying, oh yeah, you're definitely crazy. Nothing like that. It is very supportive and neutral. Just as a side note, because people also ask me, you know, why am I so involved in all of this? Well, one support group meeting, a person says to me, I've seen you before. I said, oh, where, at a UFO conference? No, I saw you on board the craft. I said, really? Oh, that's interesting. And so I kind of blew it off. I didn't think much of it. Then it was like a year and a half later, different support group meeting, a different person said, I've seen you before. I said, same thing, you know, like at a conference or something. No. I saw you on board the craft. You were sitting on this bench naked and you were freaking out, and they told me to go over to you to calm you down. Well, at that point, I decided, okay, I better get regressed. So I had three separate regressions, could not find anything along those lines, but had multiple past lives. And this is something that many people that have had contact with these non-human intelligence these intelligences talk about the fact that reincarnation is very real, that this is a process that the universe goes through. And so, as I say, this phenomena gets more complicated every turn you take in trying to better understand it. You know, it just throws you another curveball. Fascinating.
So wait a minute, Les. So they've seen you before on the craft, but they saw you on the craft in a past life?
Well, no. That's what I, first of all, what I thought was they saw me in this life. Okay.
Okay.
But I'm glad you brought that up, because in a subsequent meeting, I was talking to another person about this, and they said, well, perhaps what they did is they saw you in a past life on board the craft, which is totally possible, I suppose. You know, that this person may have had that experience, but in a previous lifetime.
Whoa. So now I have to ask you this, my friend. Do you remember even being abducted?
No. I have no conscious recollection of anything like that. However, my latest theory is, whether you consciously remembered or not, we've all had an experience. Every one of us has had an experience. The more I talk to people, the more I talk to the experiencers, it seems to me that we've all had an experience of some sort, again, whether consciously we remember it or not. And I think that there's a certain amount of control that they're able to have on our brains in some way, shape, or form that can block this stuff out. And not all people are able to bring that back up for whatever reason. And I'm certainly in that category. I had multiple past lives, but I could not bring up anything in that regard. It might have been so painful, especially since that person said I was totally freaking out on board the craft. It's just been buried somehow, and it's just not going to resurface.
You bring up something very interesting. This was one road I wanted to go down during this conversation, and that is trauma. An old college professor of mine, a good friend of mine, once said, you know, Tim, I do couch time, as he called it, therapy once a year, whether I need it or not. He said, I go in for about a month and a half, and I sit down with a therapist, and just to get my head right, is the way he put it. And on his advice, I went in to do some therapy. I had ended a relationship. It was a relationship I was deeply involved with, and I couldn't get my head right, put it that way. We all go through stuff like that. So I went to go do some couch time, as he put it. Mm-hmm. And the therapist wanted to put me under hypnosis, but pulled me out of it because he said I was sobbing so terribly deep that he thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I just hit this bottomless well of sorrow that I couldn't pull you out of it. But he said, the words you were forming weren't words. He said, I don't know what you were saying.
Wow.
And he said, mm-hmm. but I barely got you out of it. I don't know what it was.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting, because I think that's how real. It points to the fact that this situation is so impactful to you that you were consumed by your tears and your feelings. I had a similar thing. One of my past lives, I was a samurai, of all things.
I've had one of those too, but go ahead. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was deeply in love with this woman, but I could never be with her because the warlord that I was working for always had me out, you know, knocking heads off or something. Mm-hmm. And I began to sob uncontrollably. I mean, it was, And you could feel it in your soul.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. how deep that love was, that was unrequited. You know, it was just. So what is that all about? You know,
I don't know. And yeah.
So I think that, like I said earlier, that I think we've all had experiences, you know, that can be buried very deep. And some of it is you're able to bring it forward. Some of it you can't, maybe for a good reason, that it doesn't come forward. But I know exactly what you're talking about, because I've been there, done that.
So my question would be, and I bring all this forward to ask this question, how is the trauma that's dealt to experiencers, mm-hmm, different than trauma that we may experience that's dealt out to each other, that we deal out to ourselves?
Well, the big factor, you know, that people talk about is PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
PTSD is the thing that many of these experiencers come back with. And that does need to be dealt with in a therapeutic way. And depending upon what the experiencer is requesting, we do have people that are familiar, like Yvonne Smith is well known for handling PTSD cases. There's a number of other people that we have the capability to send people to that have that expertise. A complicated phenomena. There's no question about it. And each case is different. I mean, in general, a lot of the physical or psychological effects are similar, but the individual case, how things happen and how they occur, are all different.
Because I have to think that this is a totally different trauma. I mean, we hear of experiments, we hear of a hybridization program, we hear of, mm-hmm, implants, we hear of things that are done to people that, in a human frame, are barbaric. Mm-hmm. You know, if we did these things to ourselves unknowingly, it would border on rape, torture. Mm-hmm. These would be crimes against humanity. When we talk about this being done from an alien race, it could be a custom we don't understand, and therefore we can't take blame and place blame somewhere and pull some alien, mm-hmm, into court and prosecute them. You know, you can't.
That's true.
You can't get justice. You know, mm-hmm, what I mean, Les?
Yeah.
So how do you walk somebody? I mean, as far as Opus goes, how do you walk somebody through these steps and get them to resolve themselves and get them right, so to speak?
Yeah, and that's a great question, Tim. It's a process that goes on. When these people contact us, we give them two choices right off the bat. One is to go into the online support group, and then number two, to talk to an EST member to further understand what it is that they're looking for. In a lot of cases, they might be looking for a mental health practitioner, or they're looking for a hypnotherapist. And we counsel, in most cases, with regard to hypnosis, we almost counsel against it in a way, simply because, you know, once you squeeze the toothpaste out of the tube, it's hard to put it back in.
Right.
So you may hear something that you don't want to hear, or you won't be able to handle.
Mm-hmm.
So we tell these people, if you're very concerned, interested, that you want to do this, and you're sure that you're going to be able to understand what's going on and handle and work with the hypnotherapist with it, then go ahead. But so those are the types of things that we do. It's a process. You can't snap your finger and then make it all go away. There are people that come to us that want these experiences to stop, but the majority want them to continue because they've had positive experiences. Even though they may have started off very negatively, eventually people come to a point where they accept what's going on. And then when they stop, which they eventually do stop, it's almost like the Stockholm syndrome. Why aren't you coming back for me? You know, don't you love me anymore? You know, I mean, it's the whole process that goes on. And, we talk to people about various books that you want to get, like Kathleen Martin has Extraterrestrial Contact, which is a very good book. The late Dan Druffel wrote a book, How to Protect Yourself Against Alien Abduction. And in that book, she has 9 different ways that people have contacted her over the years and said, this is what we did to stop these types of things. And the religious aspect is an interesting point that comes up, where people use, you know, Holy Christ as a term to stop these types of things from happening. And again, it's all based on who you're actually dealing with too. You know, are you dealing with a reptoid? Are you dealing with a mantid type? Are you dealing with a demon? That's a whole nother ball game. Mm-hmm. that is quite scary.
We had Nathaniel Gillis on the program a couple months ago. And he's a demonologist, and he comes from what some people may consider a controversial standpoint, in that he believes that demons and aliens are really of the same ilk, that there's a reason why using Christ's name or mm-hmm. using the belief in Christ is, there's a reason why that drives an alien away. And he believes that they may be just tied to the demonic. Do you?
What we talked about earlier is the fact that we can have good ones and we can have bad ones within each group. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a source that all these groups understand is out there.
Okay.
And whether you call it Christ or Buddha or Muhammad or whoever, has something to do, some kind of connection in all of this as well.
Okay. So you wouldn't go as far as saying they all come from a demonic source, but
no,
it does help no. in the ones that are bad.
Well, let's put it this way. If they are demonic and an alien, then the combination, then it does seem to work. But I don't have a definitive answer on that. Okay. That's fair.
So let's get down to the hybridization program and why. You know, a lot of people have had speculation as to why aliens would want to, execute a hybridization program with humans. Wouldn't we be the inferior race? Wouldn't we be the monkeys of the universe? Why would you want to, why would you want to take inferior genes and mix them with an alien race?
Well, I think if they're planning to take over the planet, they need to have a much better, robust physical structure to okay. work with. Although if you're a reptoid, your physical structure is pretty damn tough. You don't hear about a lot of hybrids being utilized with a reptilian nature. What you hear most and see most is the grays, being that combination of our DNA and the supposed grays. Which then presents another problem. If these are more robotic in nature, you know, and not as biological in nature, then what the hell does that mean?
Yeah.
You know, I'm very aware that there are hybrids out there. There's mm-hmm. no question about it in my mind. Helen Luttrell wrote a book called Rachel's Eyes. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's about her daughter going to college with a hybrid.
Okay.
And this hybrid was fed special food that was delivered by the military to the school. And she did look strange. She did. She always wore glasses and a big floppy hat and things of that nature. And Helen got very involved with it. Matter of fact, Helen was in our support group for many years in San Jose because she lives in Northern California. And she got to meet this military person. I forget his rank right now, but she got involved to the extent that there supposedly is a base in Nevada, not Area 51. This is a base that's in northeast Nevada. Has basically hybrids there working there. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of the crash retrievals happen. And they bring the aliens there, and there's a whole process that goes on. So you gotta read that book. It's amazing. Rachel's Eyes by Helen Luttrell. It's phenomenal.
Wow.
And
yeah.
I believe in our meetings, support group meetings, here again is a person that she wasn't, unstable. She was very rational, very together, just telling it as it were. And she was regressed, by another board member of our organization, June Steiner, who's also in San Jose. And so that basic transcript is in the book as well. So it's very interesting. Very interesting.
That is an interesting story indeed. I wonder what kind of special food is that.
It was a liquid. It was mostly liquid.
Really?
That they delivered, yeah.
Huh. That's fascinating, fascinating. Let me ask you this, too. Along with the hybridization program, there's the implants. What exactly are in these implants that are being put in people's bodies?
That's a great question. Okay, I'm going to bore you with detail.
please, because I want to know. For years, we've been talking about these implants, but what exactly are being put in people's bodies?
Well, the late Dr. Roger Lear did a fantastic job. Had 17 people that they removed implants from. Mm-hmm. And what they found after some rigorous analysis, no inflammatory rejection reaction by the body to these foreign objects.
Okay.
No visible portal of entry. Collections of specialized nerve endings surrounding the object. An outer coating of a ceramic biological material, a metallic phase where inorganic metal becomes biological tissue, the emission of radio waves, which are deep space frequencies in the FM band, electromagnetic fields in excess of 10 milligauss, composition of meteoric iron 66, rare earth metals such as U-236, a single isotope of uranium existing by itself, as well as elements such as iridium, which is very rare and hard to find in the Earth's crust. Non-terrestrial isotopic ratios indicating the involved elements did not come from Earth. The existence of carbon nanotubes and strands and fibers. When they found this out, this was before we actually came up with carbon nanotubes, the existence of those things.
Really?
Gold spheres, which have unknown function, metallic caverns that are no larger than a diameter of one atom, resistance to ordinary cutting techniques such as metallic sawing or severing with a cutting instrument. One of the specimens had to be cut with a laser.
Jeez.
I mean, they did a fantastic analysis, and some of these things even moved when they tried to extract them.
Really?
They actually started to move. So who the hell is doing that? Is it some secret part of our government messing with us, or is this something that extraterrestrials, if you will, non-human entities have put into a person to either track them, monitor them? There's been some talk about the fact that it's monitoring our functions and seeing how much pollution is actually entering our bodies, which is a wonderful, nice thing for them to be doing, I guess. But most of the people, it's some kind of a transmitting or and maybe even a receiving, controlling type of a object, having that kind of effect, especially if it can transmit in the deep space frequencies that he talked about in his book, The Alien Scalpel, I think is the name of his book that he wrote about that. Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah, so you got hybrids, you got implants, you got marks on the body, you know, triangular marks, triangular dots, scoop marks. These are all physical types of things that people are coming back with, and you have to say to yourself, well, wait a minute, this is evidence. This is evidence, folks. But the skeptics don't want to buy it. They just keep coming up with all kinds of irrational excuses as to why this is not evidence and why these people are not experiencing what they think they're experiencing.
Les, I got to ask you, when it comes to people who have been abducted, you hear about family lines, that it happens mm-hmm. from generation to generation. Do you believe that there are certain family lines that get targeted?
I think that what's going on is that if there's been any manipulation in the DNA of these people, it's certainly generational, and that they're following generations. And that's certainly the case with the telepathic capabilities. Gary Nolan from Stanford University with Kit Green, ex-CIA, or he's probably still CIA, group of people that they examined that had psychic and telepathic capabilities had an area in their brain, the caudate putamen area, where there's a lot more connections in that area of the brain with these people that have that capability. And so then they, that individual, when they checked further, their parents had it or their grandparents had it, and so on and so forth. And so it's the chicken and the egg type of a thing. Is this something that was caused by the aliens way down the line? Now this is, they're following it, or is this something, the reason why they're following us is because these people have that capability? So it's a fascinating area. And I think that perhaps, these people with those kind of capabilities are set up for life in a better way than most of us that don't have that. And so I think that, they're also finding that these people have also connected with spouses, that have a similar type of a thing going on. So you could, go forward in time, that eventually all the people on the planet will have that capability. And so we're evolving in that way, that positive way. So that, unfortunately, if you cheat on your wife, she'll know that you're screwing around.
Oh, I don't like these aliens already. No, I'm kidding. That's a joke. It's a joke, folks. Let me ask you this, Les, because it seems to me, the reason I bring up the bloodline thing is not only does it seem like there are certain bloodlines and generations that are being targeted, but do you think that they're actually going after, and this seems to be, forgive me if you will, because I'm getting a little conspiratorial here, it seems like there would be certain bloodlines that would be of interest to the aliens. Let's talk royal bloodlines or bloodlines of certain figures in history that they might want to follow or tag, or it might be of interest to these aliens. Do you think that they're following those as well? And I bring up maybe Merovingian bloodlines or,
right,
or, you know, to something to that effect. Mm-hmm. Do you think that that's in play?
Well, I think that, you know, these people tend to be tall. There's a lot of interesting genes, DNA going on with these people. It could be, you know, something where they're absolutely interested in that. Why these people are seem to be in control of what's going on the planet. You know, what is that factor that makes them have that capability? I think that's a great question. It's totally possible that that's why they're following the bloodlines. I mean, you know, they talk about Rh negative people too that have seemed to be a focus. Mm-hmm. and how that came about 40,000 years ago is still a mystery. You know, why did that happen? So there's so many interesting questions to be understood and asked, you know, but that was a good one. That's a good question.
Well, thank you. I try to make it interesting every once in a while. Tell me, as someone who's had experiences, maybe not just with UAPs, but other paranormal experiences as well, tell me what type of phenomena that Opus helps experiencers with.
Yeah, you know, spiritual awakening, kundalini awakening, poltergeist activity. We mentioned demons, angels before. But as it turns out, for whatever reason, the most of the people that contact us, the vast majority, are people that have had experiences with non-human intelligences of some sort. Whether they're the Greys or the reptilians or the mantids or the Nordics, or orbs. The first thing that people talk about are the Greys. The second thing is orbs. Then the third thing is interdimensional. And the fourth thing is poltergeist activity. Hmm. And those seem to be all connected in a very meaningful way. Because many times people talk about the fact that a recent family member has passed away recently, I've been sent a video of a woman who is basically near death, and the video shows these orbs that are congregating around her. And it's the feeling that this person had that had this video was that these were also past members of the family that had passed away.
Okay.
And were coming to basically say, hello, how you doing? we're ready to take you away. Mm-hmm. It's just whatever you can possibly think of is happening out there, and these are not little fuzzy little things in the camera lens either.
Right,
these are things, and the effects of these orbs, for instance, it can be positive and negative. We've in a book recently called Skinwalker at the Pentagon by George Knapp and Colm Keller, they talk about the fact that these orbs have entered people's bodies and they've come up with autoimmune diseases afterwards. And then there's another case, Kathleen Martin, I think, writes about it in one of her books, about the fact that this orb went into a gentleman's body who had cancer, and it basically cured him. Afterwards, he was fine. I have another story that I was flying back from a MUFON symposium in Richmond, Virginia. This is many years ago, and I happened to be sitting next to a woman doctor, and come to find out that she was the head of St. Jude Hospital. And so we started talking about what I was doing, what she was doing. And she said, after I told her I was involved with this UFO stuff and paranormal stuff, and she said, I got to tell you a story. And I said, okay. And so she said, when I was at a previous job, this woman had cancer, and they were going to be operating on her.
Mm-hmm.
And the morning of the operation, the doctors came in to bring her into the surgery, and the woman said, "I'm okay. I don't need surgery. I'm fine." And so they just thought she was freaking out, and they said, "Well, what do you mean by that?" Well, they came last night and took care of it, and so they wheeled her in anyway, and they took another X-ray just to, you know, placate her and make sure that they were doing the right thing. And sure enough, the cancer was gone. And it was like, and you hear stories about this where actually healings are created or done. And the flip side is that these things can happen to people where they have the capability to heal other people. John Salas, the gentleman that was in charge of the Malmstrom Air Force Base when those missiles shot down.
Mm-hmm.
I gave a talk at the MUFON Symposium in Las Vegas a couple of years ago. And he was in the audience where I gave a presentation to a group of experiencers. And he was there with his wife. He said, "Can I talk to you afterwards?" And I said, "Sure." So he came over to my table. I had a table in the exhibitor area, hawking my book. And he said, "We're experiencers, both of us. We've both had major experiences." And his wife, after the experience, became or had the ability to heal people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so there's so many stories like that you hear of really positive things that go on, as opposed to the negative thing. So I am every day blown away by this whole phenomena, and that it seems to be not our imagination. You know, we're not talking about sleep paralysis or false memory syndrome or fantasy proneness. It's none of the above. It's something is happening, and the big question is, what is it? And it can be multiple things.
I'm wondering, in that last case there, Les, is that an example of having an experience with an alien and then something awakening within yourself that you've always had, or is that a gift that's given to you by an alien?
It's possible that it could be both. I mean, I don't have an answer for that. But it seems interesting that it occurred after that experience, and so I don't know. I really don't know. That's the problem with this whole phenomena. There's a lot of I don't knows.
Interesting indeed. The group is Opus, and the Organization for Paranormal Understanding and Support. We'll have a link to it in the description of the show. I'm also going to put up a link to the book, The Unknown Other and the Existential Proposition of Alien Contact. I want you to check out Les's book as well, because there's some interesting stories in there as well. Les, it's been a fascinating conversation with you, my friend.
Oh, great. I, Tim, I really appreciate it. You asked a lot of good questions, and so it makes the time go very quickly
when
you have someone that's interviewing like you. That's great. Well, thank you.
I appreciate your time, my friend, and we should do it again.
Oh, anytime.
Absolutely.
I really appreciate it. It's really great. And
absolutely,
I appreciate what you do and all the people that do these kinds of shows, because it's so important to get the word out for people that are having experiences like this. So they can just come to our website, opusnetwork.org, opusnetwork.org, and you know, we'll try to help you as best we can.
Well, we're going to work with Opus. We're going to put a button on darknessradioshow.com on the front page there. So if you are having experiences with the paranormal and are looking for support, and you need an outreach there, that you can outreach to Opus. Opus, and by the way, Les, let's mention some of the members of Opus. And you do have
sure.
a very prestigious staff, some of which have appeared on this very show. That you can reach out to and get help from. Go ahead and mention some of the members of your staff.
Yeah, well, we have Russ Galpone, who is involved. He's a psychologist, was involved with the free study. We have Geraldine Orozco, who has, if you have Facebook or anything like that, you'll see a lot of her out there. She does a fantastic job and been on many shows. She has, she's the woman that has had basically hybrid children. She's also given birth to children. So, I mean, she has a background that is incredible in that regard. June Steiner, who I mentioned earlier, who's a psychotherapist. We have Mark Comerford, who is our lawyer, which you probably don't really need to talk to him.
But he's you a never great know.
Guy. Hopefully not. You have Jason Wolf, who is our webmaster, and but we have Linda Howe, Melinda Leslie, Terry Lovelace, Yvonne Smith. There's so many people, and they're all listed basically on our website. If you go into the board area, you'll see all those people, and I'm sure I'm missing people that I should be talking about, but
no worry.
Anyway, just go to our website and you'll see them all there.
There you go. If you forget opusnetwork.org, we'll have a button on darknessradioshow.com. So you can click on there if you're needing assistance in any paranormal experience that you're having there, whether it be demons, angels, poltergeist activity, or alien. You can reach out to Opus, and the Opus Network can help you there. Les, thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, Tim. Have yourself a great day.
And you as well, my friend. Folks, I want to thank you so much for joining us this week here on Darkness Radio. I want to thank Beer City Bruiser and Mally Fox for being on as well this past week and in the week before with our Christmas shows. I want to thank Microdose Gummies and HelloFresh for sponsoring the show this week. Want to thank you for listening this week and tuning in for another great week of shows. And as we turn the page into a new year, as we're getting ready for celebrating New Year's, I want to just put out some special prayers that you stay safe, take care of each other, look out for one another. You know, this past weekend was just a horrendous weekend for weather. We all went through the bomb cyclone together and went through some horrendous weather with cold and snow. Say some extra prayers for people in the Northeast, especially in Buffalo, who are digging out and went through a horrendous, horrendous weather pattern. They're still digging out from snow. They're actually finding people dead in their cars. So say some special prayers for people in the Northeast as they continue to dig out from snow. Do something for somebody this weekend. If you can, if you've got an extra $5 or 5 minutes, help somebody shovel their driveway or plow out of their driveway. Help somebody get back to normality. That's one of those things where, you know, we've all gone through a tough time here during the holidays. Maybe somebody's not feeling right. Maybe they were alone during the holidays and are trying to get to a better state of mental health. Maybe somebody needs a coat or a blanket or is having problems staying warm. Let's help somebody out this weekend. Do it for your buddies here at Darkness Radio. We're going to do that as well here at Darkness Radio this weekend. Find somebody to help and help them out. If we do a little something this weekend, we can leave this world a little bit better than what we found it. And that's the goal, isn't it? Just to leave it a little bit better than what we found it. Thanks so much, folks, for being with us this week. We'll be back next week with a whole new slate of shows. We're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to seeing your smiling faces as well. Thanks so much for tuning in to the best in paranormal podcasting. This has been Darkness Radio.